by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on cover schemes for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not public. Stakes are buried, not headlined. The centers are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink enough.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, setting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Today on Cold Reality Radio, special report the truth about vaccines with my very special guest, Clint Richardson of the Corporation Nation. A focus on natural law and how to reclaim the natural rights of each of us have been lost through the contractual nature of citizenship as artificial person to the state. Other topics vary from government's hidden trillions in CAFR investments wealth, the Tribune method of education, Agenda 21, Common Core, the dangers of vaccination, which we'll be focusing on today, and other pressing national and global issues. Clint is a primary researcher, writer, radio personality, and filmmaker specializing in the audited annual financial statements, the CAFR, the C-A-F-R, of the corporate government, municipal corporations, and its ownership, stock, investments, and private industry. He currently resides in Utah, where a gigantic NSA center was recently built in his backyard. He is currently in the process of severing his citizenship to the Municipal Corporation of Washington, D.C., and wishes to help others follow the same path to become free men. So today is a very, very special program because Clint, he doesn't do what I've done over the years, is just kind of like mash everything together and just, you know, just the, you know, rush of consciousness where all these bad things are happening. He focuses on some of the most important things, and we're going to talk to him today about vaccines and how they have been turned into a biological weapon. So, it is Sunday, February 21st, 10:04 a.m. on the east coast of Nightmarica. And we will be getting started now. Welcome to the program, everyone. I've done a lot of podcasts, and I've listened to a lot of people. I've listened to Alex Jones, Mr. Never Have a Resolution to Anything Except Start Your Own Podcast, Start Your Own This, Start Your Own That. And that's part of it. But through the machinations of just reality and just being involved, you come across individuals that have, you know, a desire to do research, to do more research than anyone else, to really dig into the issues. And what's more important than even, well, I mean, freedom and the true freedom that could be, if you don't have your health, then what do you really have? What do you have if you're not, if you go through this life healthy, you can accomplish mostly anything. But if you're not healthy, then what? Then it becomes even more of a struggle, even more of a task to deal with on a daily basis. And we're going to find out some things today that we thought that we already knew, but the level at which these things have taken place over the years, we are dealing with true psychopaths. And most people can't come to terms, come to grips with those things. So I'm going to go ahead and bring Clint in to the program. All right, we're going to get the sound levels good, and then we're going to start talking about something of the utmost importance. All right, Full Reality Radio, Sunday, February 21st. Clint, we have you.
Greetings.
Good morning. All right. So let's see what we got here. UCY.TV, the platform here. I'd like to make another announcement that today at 5 o'clock Eastern Time, Clint's Corporation Nation Archives will begin from the first show and will move forward to chronicle his incredible research that he's done. And we're proud to have you. So thanks so much for being here this morning. And also, you know, kind of saying, hey, you know, do your thing. This is information needs to get out there. And let's expand it and proliferate it into the world. So good morning, Clint. Thanks for being here again.
Sure. I certainly appreciate that. It does feel a little bit strange not to be doing a show, and it's kind of weird to think that it's just going to go into the ether and sort of just sit there, you know.
Right. So it's a pleasure. Jules said, "Hey, let's get this thing rolling." And I think the last time that I had you on, we spoke about it. Actually, it was something that transpired after the broadcast. And And then I just kind of said, "Hey, can we do this? Can we get your program going here?" And you said yes, and so now it is a reality. So I'm very excited about that, as well as having you here this morning. Okay, so we've got, you know, roughly a little bit under 2 hours here, and your research is so vast that how could we possibly cover this in 2 hours? But again, you know what? Whenever you like, you can join me here at this time slot to proliferate and get more information out there, as well as, I'm sure, you know, you've been on other programs, you've been back on RBN. And with Deanna Spingola and John. So how would you encapsulate this, your research on vaccines? Because I've had you on here. We've talked about citizenship and the entrapment of this contract that makes us property of this corporation nation. When you look at what triggered this whole thing about vaccines for you, Was it the citizenship? Was it that first? Or was it just a just at the, you know, this was always a concern of yours even before you, your awakening to what
well,
the world truly
use
is?
To use the cliche, and I'm actually giving a feedback. Okay, I'm hearing myself. So, to use the cliche, I'm a cancer survivor. I was in high school, and I had a cancer that's pretty rare. In fact, it's only supposed to appear in people that are over the age of 75 or people who have an autoimmune disorder like AIDS, HIV, which back in 1990 was very sort of, you know, untested and unproven and all that stuff, as it is today. You know, it changed my life. It made me reconsider a lot of things, and I was fortunate enough to get through that with just surgery and nothing else. I wouldn't have known any better at age 17 what I could or could not do.
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, as I realized that it set me on this course to sort of discover, I wanted to know what the hell gave me cancer, and then I found out that my brother's youngest son got the same exact cancer and actually died of it at 9 years old. Got it at one, went through all the treatment, and then died of it at nine years old. So I had sort of a mortality complex, if you will. I didn't really think I'd live this long because I had cancer, you know, this horrible, horrible epidemic that nobody can explain why it's happening. And so that sort of led me to the point where I said, well, gosh, I kind of want to learn what the heck happened to me? Why did this thing happen to me? Several years later, I'd heard about cancer viruses that were you know, that is public record now, that were in all the vaccines. So many different aspects of it, and so I started looking into it, and the guys at We Are Change here that we started in Utah. And the guys in We Are Change LA that I was a part of way back when, we started looking into it. And then eventually I had this massive set of data in front of me, and I just kind of started picking through it. And, you know, that's where the first documentary came. But that was 5 years ago. And, you know, what I've learned since has been I got to make a new movie.
Right.
I mean, geez.
Okay, so your the flagship vaccination movie was what, 2011?
2010, I think. 2011, yeah.
So, what if you don't mind me asking, what particular type of rare cancer did?
It was a specific sarcoma, and it was mine happened to be on the tongue, which is a really strange kind of thing. Never seen it before. The doctors treated it as a wart, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, actually told me back then that they thought I might have, you know, because I'm not supposed to have it at that age. There's no reason that a child should have this cancer unless they've got, an autoimmune deficiency, specifically AIDS.
Mm.
And so they, you know, ignorant as they are, they pretty much told me at that young, ripe little age that I had AIDS. And I'm like, what the hell? I've slept with one girl. I've got the same girlfriend for a year and a half. That's all I've had. What the hell? How can I possibly have, you know, HIV, right? And, you know, so that was their solution, to tell a kid without his parents there that you know. And it took, back then, it took 2 or 3 weeks to get tested. So by the time a month went by, because of my age, I finally, you know, found out I didn't have AIDS after preparing for it. So it was just a severe, severe life-altering event. And that, like I said, it drove me to want to know what the heck happened. After years of traveling and, like I said, I call it a mortality complex, but I don't know what else to call it. I didn't think I was going to be alive at this point.
Yeah.
Didn't get, you know, therefore didn't get married, didn't have children. You know, once you have cancer, you're like, you know, it's a scary thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of a sudden I kind of realized I was just sort of going all over the place and not really stable, and I'm glad I did. And then I finally settled down, became a sound editor, in Hollywood and learned all the skills to do sound, at least, and then figured out how to do the movies and quit my career and started doing activism. Gosh, that was 2008, I think.
Right. So you were diagnosed with something at, what, at 18?
Yeah, sarcoma, but I don't remember the actual name of it.
And, of course, I say something because, you know, this medical dictatorship that we live in has a very strange way of confusing and, you know, it's this, we don't know what this is, we don't know what, and we're going to get into neurological wasting diseases, dementia, and Alzheimer's. But so as you went forward, did you receive any treatment? Did you...
No, just surgery. Took out a huge chunk of my tongue. The tongue's a huge, huge muscle. Goes really far down the throat. And so, yeah, I had 10 stitches in the tongue. And that was it for me, fortunately. Like I said, my youngest brother's son had the same thing. It was coming out of his ear, a brain cancer. And they had to break his jaw and do all that crazy stuff they do when they give you chemotherapy when you're a child and stuff. So,
right.
Like I said, I mean, it was just it was a driver. I think that kind of thing is a driver for most people. There's always something about someone's past that forces them to go in a specific route.
You know, I've always had my suspicions about the health and different things. Nutrients, as I was telling the other day, taking, as a youngster having some kind of infection, upper respiratory, I took erythromycin. I was like, I feel worse now after taking this. You know, I had my own type of awakening to, you know, kind of like the rude awakening when my mother was diagnosed with my dad was diagnosed with esophageal cancer in 2001, the summer of 2001. And then my mother, while he was being treated, had a glioblastoma brain tumor, and then she actually passed before him, and so that just kind of triggered me into a whole different level of awareness. And then I started seeing, you know, calcium commercials about calcium and how calcium was so important on extinguishing the acids in the body. That was the Bob Barefoot Okinawa calcium. So that was my trigger, and obviously your personal trigger, but I know that it stopped me in my tracks, you know, at the age of 32.
It doesn't make sense. You know, we've become culturized. We've been sort of induced and brainwashed into considering this all as normal.
Oh, yeah.
Every nurse, every doctor out there, it's like routine for them to see cancer patients every day, new cancer patients. 2 in 3 children before the age of 18 was the statistic that I rounded up are going to have cancer in the future, right? I mean, that's not normal. That's not right. Something is happening. And, lately, you know, I had Patrick Jordan on my show a lot. Patrick, I really recommend his stuff. You don't want to talk about a researcher. You want to talk about the guy who's just pulled together everything. That's the guy, and he's got like 12, now he's going to have 16 books because he's doing a new series. But, I mean, we talked about this, and if you think about when is it that we have any kind of reaction, it's always through ingestion or it's through a sting of some type. You know, we get a rusty nail, we get a wasp or a bee that stings us, we have an allergic reaction, right?
Right.
So we always have to be stung by something, essentially, to get this kind of illness. Now, we can get food poisoning. We can certainly kill ourselves by getting some kind of poisoning inside of us. But we can't get these diseases like we get from just food for the most part. You're talking about vaccination is a direct line bypassing all of nature's boundaries, everything that's set up in your body to prevent disease. You're bypassing every single aspect of that, and you're pushing literally the worst kind of crap into your veins. You're pushing things that I couldn't believe it as I was uncovering what the hell we're doing to each other. And I call, at this point, I mean, to start off with a bang, man, I call medicine. I call modern medicine, especially vaccination, and especially these different forms of treatment, as they call them, I call it cannibalism. It's the new form of cannibalism where you're not eating people, you're injecting frickin' aborted fetal tissue into your body. You're injecting the proteins and cell substrates and other proteins and blood and serum, and you're putting that directly into your body. And that I found out is the most important aspect. Forget the moral aspect of it. I mean, yeah, very important to understand the moral aspect of literally these people are so sick that they're using aborted fetal tissue to grow vaccines on. They're called human diploid cells in the inserts. And you really need to, that's in the last half hour of my documentary. I cover that. But, you know, yeah, moral issue right away. But it's so much deeper than just the surface aspect of religious morals or whatever. This is something that I found out is the main cause of all disease. Because what we're doing is we're spreading not only animal proteins, not only the serum or blood of animals, and Patrick's theory is called serum sickness, right. Which, you know, we're all suffering essentially from injecting blood into our system that's not the same type or the same, even the same, you know, animal blood into human blood, and you're injecting that right into your veins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the best example I can give, and there's every example I can imagine, we're talking about things like Gulf War syndrome and all these different horrible, horrible disease states that we have. Imagine putting DNA, basically, or RNA into your body that is programmed differently than your own.
Right.
Right? So what happens to a computer when you put a virus in there? What happens when you put a cancer virus into your computer, man? It starts growing a cancer. It starts growing a program that defeats all other programs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And this is how your body works. Your body, I mean, I don't want to belittle the beauty and wonder of the sure. human form, but to consider the body similarly to a computer or to a machine helps you to understand. You shouldn't do that, but it does help you to understand the some of the goals and some of the workings of these guys with transhumanism and stuff. When you're talking about, let's use squalene as an example. I'll use a couple different examples. Squalene is found in every animal, as the government says, including humans. Okay, so we all have squalene. It's like, it'd be like lubricant for your car, like oil, basically. Mm-hmm. It's in your joints. It's in everything, right? It helps your whole body to move. You can look it up. Squalene. Well, squalene is an adjuvant that they put into vaccines. And an adjuvant they call the dirty little secret of vaccines, because they found out that if a vaccine was tainted back in the day with dirt or anything, any kind of contagion, that it would increase the response of the vaccine. In other words, you'd have a higher immune response to what you just shot into your body. Well, yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? You just shot in a bunch of crap into your body, dirt, for all intents and purposes, and you have an immune response.
Right.
And that's where the word adjuvant comes from. It was, you know, back when they didn't have the clean facilities and everything. And so now we're starting to put poisons, essentially, which is where you get your mercury and your aluminum, which I actually think is worse than mercury, and all these different substances that they put in there to heighten the immune response, which is ridiculous, patently ridiculous.
Right.
So let's talk about squalene. Squalene is one of those that they harvest from sharks. Okay. Now, any time, and this is why I'm so concerned, this is the cause, I tell you, from the bottom of my heart, and from millions of hours of research, maybe millions of seconds, the cause of all modern disease is coming from these vaccines. Not, you know, whether it's purposeful or not, that begs the question. Okay, let's just talk about the reality of it, which is, hey, when I ingest, when I inject something into my body, I bypass all the safety measures in my body, and I put in a squalene that is very similar in structure, in its you know, form, and I put that into my body. My body recognizes that squalene, or for that matter, any other part of a body, whether it's human or animal, or insect. They use insect, too. My body recognizes that, and it says, oh, wait a minute, that's a foreign substance. I need to create an antibody. Okay? Now, all of a sudden, the problem is, you know, you can only create, I think it's 100 different antibodies in there's only a certain of responses your body can make with the information that it's collected and all that. You know, that's a whole other story. But you know, you modify these things enough, you start injecting things that there's no possible way they can get into your body. Even ingesting squalene as a supplement, which you could find in the stories, is not dangerous. But when you bypass the stomach and you bypass every other safety measure and you eject it right into your body, right into your bloodstream, right into your muscle, that's when your body has a medical response, an immune response. So now all of a sudden, you've got all these old people and you've got all these young people now with early onset arthritis and early onset this and early onset Alzheimer's and early onset. Why? Are children having adult diseases that are due to age? Well, okay. So if squalene is the lubricant for your joints and your muscles, well, what happens when your body starts developing antibodies against what your body normally produces? Yeah, see, it sees that shark
attack itself. They make the body attack itself.
Dude, and I'm telling you, that's what disease is. That is what modern disease, your own body attacking itself. That is the definition of most disease out there. That's what I uncovered. That's what Dr. Matsumoto uncovered.
Vaccine A. Interesting. Right. You and Patrick were talking in one of the podcasts, and you said vaccine A, and I remember we were down the road here at one of these warehouse stores, and I was going through some of the books that were, you know, discounted heavily. That was one of them. I picked it up for probably like $2.99 or $3.99.
Yeah.
But, it's worth so much more than that. I think at this time I said, I'm going to get this. And then, you know, I read into it and, you know, it mentioned, you know, about the attack on the military, how that this is tested. And you mentioned in the beginning of your Archons and Extremophiles and that particular post, that there is a biological weapons program, and we are part of that. So the testing can be done on us, you know, completely.
Oh, yeah, it's an incredible – I mean, if you ever get a chance, I believe it's Title 50 and Title 32. I have it in the documentary, actually, if I remember correctly. I think that was the first place I remember it was, yeah, it's in the documentary. I go through the whole thing. It's the biological weapons program of the United States. It's active, and it's against us. It's not against Japan or, you know, it's the United States, right? And you know, this is all these tests that they're now starting to admit to.
Yeah.
The Tuskegee experiment's a famous one, but you also have them releasing all these flu bugs in San Francisco and all these different viruses and different stuff into the air in different cities. That's the active biological weapons program. And in their discourse, in their U.S. code, they basically say that we have the right, because you are U.S. citizens, you're giving us the right. Your citizenship is an agreement, basically, to this prisoner of war, basically, that you're that we can test biological agents for research purposes, for medical purposes, for defense or military purposes, defense, you know, your defense.
So they
all
set
these
up
different ways.
A war type scenario where we're, you know, we are in a state of war constantly, so that they can enact these emergency measures, which don't really need to be enacted because, well, the war, the declaration is, you know, just more absolute power.
Well, the notion of war has to be understood that the Congress and the reason that in 1933 they basically handed over to the president unlimited power, President Roosevelt, is that the state of emergency, the word emergency, and the word war, according to the courts and to Congress, are the same thing. So I don't need to outrightly declare a war. All I have to do is declare and continue a series of emergencies. For instance, we have the terrorists. That is an emergency that keeps being re... You know, every year, the state of emergency has to be redeclared, and that's what happens. Every year, the state of emergency with the flu and all these other different viral infections and different things that you can vaccinate for is redeclared. It's an emergency. So when you declare an emergency, you have a war on the emergency. It's not a war with a nation or a state or a people. It's a war with whatever they declare the emergency against. So a war on terrorism, which doesn't exist. A war on disease, which is an impossible basically war to even define, but what it does do is give them these powers over their public citizens, which is us, to vaccinate, to require vaccinations, to require this, to require certain things in order to get public benefits. And see, this is where people get confused. They're not forcing you to do anything. They're forcing the agent of their person, their status. You want to keep and retain status, keep and retain your public benefits, keep and retain all the things that you get by being a U.S. citizen, well, then you're going to have to submit eventually to whatever they tell you to do, because otherwise you cannot keep the franchise that you're running, this U.S. citizenship. It's not what people think, and this is why these two things go hand in hand. I mean, if you're going to be someone's cattle or chattel, Or if you want to be technical, we are the land, the movable land. That's why we're under the law of the land. Then you're going to have to be subject to all of these different things. And again, and this is all in the documentary too. All the rules and regulations regarding forced vaccination. It's all there. I mean, it's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bush in 2005 set up the. You know, this emergency powers to the World Health Organization. People would be forced vaccinated, and if they didn't, then they would have to go to a camp, and all these different things that, you know, ultimately would lead up to the shenanigans that they've been dealing with for a long time now, especially with the genome project and all the things that they've been doing with that. We need to, at some point, we'll go into their control of these genomes and the control of DNA, RNA, turning them on and off and exposing the body to disease.
Right. Well, so, I mean, just to give you an idea, you sort of have to put yourself into their shoes. Like, you know, these guys, I call it the attack of the nerds. Right, I mean, I literally, it's like the nerds took over, and the nerds have no empathy for anything. It's like a video game to these guys, right? So you look at these guys and what they're doing, and you know every study you read is also an obituary, right? You're looking at the death of countless lab rats, lab animals. And there's whole corporations and whole slave trade set up just for specific types of rats that have been genetically altered and are specifically to be used for, you know, causing disease. So every time you're reading a study, you're reading these guys, and this doesn't occur to people. You're reading about a bunch of scientists, a bunch of nerds getting together and causing disease in their subject, which is a rabbit or a rat or a man or whatever, whoever they can get to volunteer for these things. They're causing the disease. That's what is happening in these studies.
Where does this funding come from? I think what happens here is that these nerds and these people that have the ability to be able to test these things, most of them think that they're actually doing this for the betterment of mankind, but whatever research that they come up with, whatever their final summation is, then the Rockefellers and these other scumbag demonoids grab it and say, okay, now we're going to use this to do that.
Well, you got to remember most of these patents are government patents.
Okay? Right.
So all the power lies in government. These corporations are powerless without government, just as religion is powerless without government, and just as government is powerless without religion. They can't exist without each other, right? So these corporations, don't forget that a corporation can be shut down tomorrow, even if it's Rockefeller, even if it's Rothschild. They can be gone tomorrow. All of the power is in the public funds, in the public, quote-unquote, sphere of government. So never believe the hype and the propaganda that corporations run the show, that the corporations are intimately dependent upon government. Most of their funding comes from government, and most of the funding comes from corporate bonds, which come from municipalities and that sort of thing, which are low-interest loans. That's where most of our public funding goes to, which is why we never see any kind of improvements to our cities or anything else, because our governments must, by law, actually invest that into the corporate structure. They give these low-interest loans or corporate bonds. Whole other story, but that is where the funding is coming from. All the research and development grants every year, billions of dollars to each pharmaceutical company, right?
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is get a government contract and have government in on your patent, and you're golden, basically. So it's a big collaboration. It's pretty frightening. It's syndicalism. If you're not familiar with syndicalism, I did a whole thing on the education system, and most of the evil shit that happens comes from the education system.
You got to get the people in the right mind to be subservient, to be collected.
Well, that's where all the money goes. It's where all the research facilities are, either military or education. Right?
Right.
Think of all the different children's hospitals. They're all part of a university. All the big hospitals, all the research centers, all part of either the military or the university system. It's a very evil system that people just don't think about all the power that it has, and that's called syndicalism if you look that up. But, 1954, go back, right? Go back to the beginning when they first started doodling in this type of stuff. We had this problem because we kept trying to infect these rabbits with disease, trying to figure. But we kept having this problem where the rabbit would fight the infection, so we couldn't use the rabbit or other animals as a test subject, right? So we kept trying to inject. But what they found is that they labeled it in 1954 in Tokyo, and this was the Institute for Infectious Diseases at the University of Tokyo, again, university.
Mm-hmm.
They published their findings, and they said that they labeled it as specifically some viral inhibitory factor was inhibiting the growth of their purposefully induced, viral infection of laboratory research rabbits, right? So, in other words, the rabbits were having a natural response, a natural immune response to being infected with something. They couldn't figure out what the hell was going on, but it was a bad thing, right? Instead of saying, "Oh, this is a great thing," it's a bad thing. We got to learn how to defeat this.
Right. We've got to usurp this amazing thing that's happening in this rabbit, this survival thing. And we have to figure out a way to usurp it so that we can.
Sure. So they said it's interfering, right? So it's interfering with the capability of foreign zoological, which is animal, proteins and pathogens and viruses and all these things to propagate and reproduce in the body. Something was stopping that. And it's this amazing thing. And what do they say? Well, it's interfering. It keeps interfering. There's an interfering or inhibitory factor that's stopping these viruses that we are creating and patenting and put, you know, making novel or unique so we can patent them and make money off them. Well, we can't seem to make them grow in these rabbits or in these other animals. So they're getting, you know, pissed off. Now the Institute of Medical for Medical Research in London has the same sort of things where they're trying to grow the virus in chicken egg membranes. Again, the membrane, the chicken eggs were having a immune response. What the hell's going on? Something that was naturally interfering with the growth of the virus. What's going on? And they then labeled it not viral inhibitory factor, but they labeled it as interferon. You ever heard of interferon? Oh,
absolutely. I saw that probably on the cover of like Time magazine or something, you know. I don't know whether yep. globalist rags that pushes lies and deception.
So they get together with the University of Tokyo, they patent it, they chose the name interferon instead of VIF or viral inhibitory factor. And they start figuring out that these proteins, these interferon proteins, they're all about the body. They're in different chromosomes, and they're part of a purification process, basically, of the body. This is where you get your T cells, your B cells, your killer helper cells. These different cells that are the cells that the T cells are the ones that everybody's concerned about with the AIDS.
Right, right. They become extremely low, and then that is when they can be more susceptible to a cold or dying from a cold or something very insignificant to someone with a healthy immune system.
So here's what's happening, and this is the frightening part about it, because again they weren't looking at this as a good thing. Oh, we've got this wonderful thing. No, we have to first bypass it, and then we can clone it, or we can reproduce interferon artificially, and we can sell it as a cure for the infections we're giving to people. Because this is a viral inhibitory factor, literally something we can harvest, we can destroy in people's bodies, right? Infect them with our disease, and then say, well, we've got this interferon product that we can put in your body. It's artificial. It doesn't, you know, it's not natural. But we can try that as a solution to your viral infection. Well,
anyone in their right mind at that point would say, maybe this is something that we should not mess with. But that's not the case.
Well, like I said, that's not that they're people have the notion that all of this quote unquote science, and you know, science to me is a scientific method and nothing else. Anytime you name something as a science, or name something as religion, or name something as government, you've gone too far. You've settled on something. You've created something that is artificial. Right? Science is artificial. Science is no longer the study of nature to preserve and keep the design. No. We're trying to change everything. We're trying to control it. We're trying to do things that are, for lack of a better term, evil, you know, artificial to the structure of life itself. And that's what these guys are doing. So, to be clear, we're talking about interferon, and this is the way we explained it. Your body is very much a communication device, right? So all these different cells, all these different functionalities in your body, it's all about communication. This is the most important aspect of all of these proteins and all of these different cells, is that they're communicating with each other. So when your body has a viral infection, this is what's happening in those rabbits, right? You have a viral inhibitory factor. Well, what is that? Well, we're going to call it interferon because it interferes with our diseases. Well, what's actually happening? I'm a cell. I'm hanging around. I'm all happy. All of a sudden, this giant needle gets into me and starts trying to infect me. Right? All these viruses are now trying to come around and change my very communication. Start trying to clog my ports, my my headset so that I can't communicate with any other cell. So what do? I send out different types of cells, right? Now, those proteins, they go into the bone marrow, and they say, hey, I'm a cell in this part of the body, in this grid. I'm in trouble. I'm being infected. And then it's basically, it's like making a cell phone call. It's like calling 911. Your body then creates this interferon, if you will, this type, these lymphocytes that mostly hang out in the vertebrate. And so you have your NK cells, your natural killer cells, your B cells, your T cells. This is where, you know, all this HIV stuff and all AIDS stuff and all these different immunodeficiency problems that people have is because they've cut off the very communication system by sending things into the body to cut off the communication, to make it so that when your cell is attacked, when it sends out proteins, which is like making a cell phone call to your vertebrate, to your lymphocytes, and then lymphocytes say, okay, we better create this cell to fight this virus, sends it out, and that's how we get better after a disease. Well, if you cut that off, if you cut off that communication power between cells and the lymphocytes, then they can't call for help, and they're going to get infected. You're going to have diseases, created laboratory diseases like AIDS, autoimmune deficiency syndrome. Well, that makes perfect sense when you actually think about it, as your body is a very intelligent communicating device. Right, and this is what's happening, and this is just one example of so many different diseases. I got one other example, okay. Which is also in the documentary, which is something called porcine zona pellucida, which is basically the what they're doing to sterilize horses,
right?
Which is just this crime against nature, but also what they're doing to sterilize people.
Yeah, they use the same. It's almost as if, and you know, it's almost as if they did that, and all this testing that's being done on animals was specifically for humans, not into enhance our lives or enhance our protection against disease, but to figure out how to do to us the same thing that they did to these horses, because they were just there was just way too many of them.
Well, yeah, so. Well, too many horses. Imagine that. So much land out there. So yeah, the U.S. Geological Survey.
They have to create a crisis of some sort.
Right. Well, and this is also. I mean, you go to the Population Council, the United Nations. You go to all these different sources, and you find all these different vaccines. And again, it's very important. It's a vaccine. When you inject something into somebody and it delivers something and it causes an immune response, that's a vaccine. That is an antibody response, I should say. Antibodies are, I mean, everybody looks at them like there's some good thing. Well, actually, what happens is, again, you're injecting a pig ovary into the horse, into the human, into whatever animal it is. And you're causing sterility just by injecting a piece of foreign cell protein that is very similar to the one in your own body, similar enough because it's DNA. We're basically, your body says, "Oh crap, we're being infected," but it's something very similar to what we already know. So let's send out antibodies against our own reproductive system, and so all of a sudden. You've created another chain reaction in the body where the body is attacking its own functionality. It's attacking itself. Again, the reason for so much sterility, the reason for so many miscarriages, all these things are these vaccines. So what happens? Well, the pig ovary, mm-hmm. in such small little pieces, it attaches to the sperm or it attaches before they develop, and it prevents spermatogenesis, which is the functionality and the bridges that are built between the cells and the sperm, and so they're retarded, they can't swim, they literally can't reach, they cannot function as normal sperm, or it attacks the hair, for lack of a better term, on the ovum of the horse or the human or whatever, and prevents the sperm from attaching. So you've literally got exactly what all the shock jocks talk about. You've got a 90% reduction in fertility of the wild horse population up in the Assateague area, up in Montana, etc. A perfect, perfect, perfect biological example of what they can do with vaccines. Inject the horse, cause sterility to take the reproduction level down and control fertility. That, my friend, is no different than the human vaccines that they give. Take Israel, for example. If you're an Ethiopian, a black Ethiopian, and keep in mind that the original Jews, well, you know, there was no whiteness in the, there's no Ashkenazi. So you go over to Israel, you find out that they've in order to get passage and become a citizen, quote unquote, of the state of Israel, which is a joke. These women were actually agreeing to be sterilized. And how do you sterilize? You inject.
That's right.
The body and cause the body to act against itself, to develop antibodies or anti-life, essentially, against against yourself. This, now, take this model, the squalene, the porcine zona pellucida, the pig ovary, anything, blood, anything that you inject into your body, including other human particles grown on cloned aborted fetal tissue, is going to make your body have an immune response, and you're going to get arthritis. You're going to get multiple sclerosis. You're going to get all these different diseases that have never existed before in all of history, and it's all being caused because we're being stung by freaking ignorant doctors and nurses who have no idea what they're doing and who have been brainwashed into supporting this.
Seems like the perfect diagnosis of the human sickness. I mean, they create bastardize science, and they make people think that they're working towards the betterment of the betterment of man. You got your professionals, your doctors, your lawyers, and they're anything but. They really are anything but. They're just like you say, fictional people in a system that is. Has been named, and so we get people trying to make a living. So they use our own survival needs against us. They use our own cells, and they make our body attack itself. Sick.
Yeah. Oh, it's horrible. But it's more than just just to say it's sick or just to say this is. All out war.
It is war. Yes, and I even understated it there because we, even though what I know, and obviously I've learned quite a bit from listening to you, you and Patrick Jordan together are just like a 1-2 punch of just research that is. I mean, listening to you guys together talk about this stuff is just so fascinating, and the regular citizen will tune in and listen to like, well, what is this? This is just, and then they would, tune out if they even got, for some trip up or so, however they got there. Maybe somebody who was in the know sent them something, and they still wouldn't get it. They still wouldn't understand, which, and you'll address the parasite, the brain parasite, and some of that as well. The reason why people are just so, just so subservient, and they don't fight. What is causing that as well?
It's a frightening thing. And I'm not one to venture into science fiction to explain anything away. But I sent you that blog, mm-hmm. big long huge entry I did on brain parasites, essentially, looking at, giving all the examples in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is purely my own speculation because I'm grasping at straws. I'm trying to figure out what it is that causes cognitive dissonance, what it is that causes people to be acting so incredibly against their best interest that it's almost impossible to possibly explain how that could possibly be. How could we possibly have set up an entire system of geoengineering, for example, which, by the way, no longer there's, I mean, if anybody still has any doubt in geoengineering, I've totally blown that out of the water just by showing that they're teaching geoengineering in every major prestigious, which means trickery, university. I mean, this is now a mainstream subject you can take in school, and they're selling it to children like they're going to save the world through geoengineering. And this isn't just spraying the skies and changing the atmosphere and controlling the weather and controlling chaos. Right. This is reseeding the seas. Mm-hmm. This is changing the very structure of land, air, and sea, folks. This is no longer just a conspiracy theory. No. This is now being taught in schools. This is now very, very out in the open. It's very frightening, and people aren't going, what the hell? They're going, oh, sign me up. Let me pay $100,000 to get that education. Let me save the world. This is why I say the nerds have taken over.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're using the fear of this climate change, originally global warming, to get everybody to have it. They create markets for everything. It's just, it's insidious. Like this morning, I'm watching the news, and I'm watching the weather, right? And there's the weather guy. And then they show, oh, the moon. Oh, look at the moon last night. Ugh. And then there was a picture of the sky with two chemtrails going from the front of the picture to the back. And he says, yeah, and then, you know, there's this here with these low-lying clouds. And I just started laughing, like, serious, Mr. Drawbeck? Seriously? Low-lying clouds? It's like somebody took a piece of chalk and just drew a line. Clouds don't form that way, sir. Clouds don't form that way, sir. I even had an online thing with the local weather guy. What's his name? Hurricane Schwartz. And I sent some information back and forth. I forget what it was, but then I included him in it or something like that. And then he sent back, the typical... You know, I forget exactly what it was, but it was like a conspiratorial tinfoil hat thing. Get some help, buddy. I was like, if you were here right now, dude, I'd pull you by that bow tie and deliver five fingers of tinfoil right at you. But that's what.
Well, this is. I don't know what to say, man. I understand now that we've been injected. We've all been injected. In other words, we've all been damaged. Mm-hmm. We are all suffering from major, major pollution of pharmaceutical grade in just about every, you know, in the food. Mm-hmm. You eat these foods, you have these artificial ingredients that are harmless, you know, by themselves, but when you combine them in foods, oh, well, suddenly you have a synthetic opiate all of a sudden because because they combined in your warm body and the chemistry, you know, your body's being used as a chemistry set, right? So I'm sitting here going, something is very, we're being controlled in ways that we can't even imagine. So I started looking into this notion of brain parasites and parasites. Just because it's fascinating, first of all. And so I look and I discover that 80% of nature is parasitic. 80% of everything in nature is a parasitic form of life, meaning that it must rely or control some other species of life in order to even give birth half the time. But, you know, this kind of thing. So, you know, you've got the wasps that are the main deliverer. So there's your vaccines, right? You got all these wasps, which I compare to nurses, delivering their sting to all these different life forms and injecting literally all these different parasitic infections into all these different bugs. And National Geographic did this wonderful, wonderful layout.
Zombie apocalypse, right?
Yeah, the zombie thing, man. Mm-hmm. And they're like the real life zombie horde in nature. I can't remember what the title of it was. But I'm looking at that, I'm going, what the hell is going on here? My favorite story, besides, you know, the wasp that stings the ladybug, then the ladybug goes completely silent and consents to everything that the that the infection in it does, it lets the bugs grow in it, eat out its outside.
It goes against every normal
right.
It climbs to the top of the tree to be then more.
Exactly. It protects its parasite.
Mm-hmm.
The parasite cannot grow unless the ladybug has a viral infection, kind of like we were talking about, that the body's not fighting, that changes its brain chemistry and makes it think or not react or whatever, kind of like how we're not reacting to anything that's happening as our world is being altered around us to be more extremophile friendly, if you ask me, to be more friendly to things. We're losing oxygen, we're losing so many different things that it's amazing. And all of these things just happen to be what an extremophile happens to like. All disease is anaerobics. It hates oxygen.
To circle back, a recent issue of National Geographic came with the shocking cover story named Real Zombies, the Strange Science of the Living Dead, is what you and Patrick covered.
Exactly. So this is not just some flight of fancy that I took. I took a big leap into brain parasites, the history of them, the Gnostic writings about what they called demented brain parasites, right? Gaia spore was another word they used for it. And here we are uncovering all these ancient seabeds and stuff under the ice and all this stuff. So, I mean, it's incredible just to go at it from a neutral perspective and say, if I were to try to explain almost everything odd, everything that's happening in government, in science, in CERN, all these different things, and the people who work for them who think it's perfectly normal, then how do I explain that? And the best thing that I could come up with was, we're infected. We've all been injected. We've all passed around all these different prions and all these different forms of proteins that attack RNA based life that attacks the DNA based life and replaces the DNA. That's RNA is a life form that was existent apparently long before DNA ever came around, and RNA is what actually copies DNA. So if you can reprogram, again, like a computer, and cause that virus, change the epigenome, cause certain reactions, and all of a sudden you have essentially, for all intents and purposes, either a reprogramming of the way we respond, our fight or flight, our logic machine. You can turn off religion, you can turn off this, you can turn off all kinds of things. You can turn off empathy, which is something that Huxley warned about, which is something that another guy, Rudolf Steiner, talked about with vaccines way back in the early 1900s, that someday you're going to have a vaccine that's going to be able to turn off empathy and turn off the God part of the brain, if you will. Right, you got all these horrible technocratic people back in the day that were predicting this is going to happen.
Right,
and I don't think Huxley was predicting. I think he was laying out the blueprint.
Right.
So we're looking at all of these different examples in nature. One of my favorites, mm-hmm. just to give you an idea of how intricate these parasites can change, the functionality of the bug or the human, the orb-weaving spider. The spider, spiders instinctually, as part of, they are part of creation, part of nature, part of the design, and part of their instinctual functionality is to spin these beautiful, wonderful, geometrically perfect webs.
Yeah, we've seen them there. And most people would just see it and not recognize the enormity of how awesome it is, that the creation of it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden they get stung by a wasp or some other functionality. Something gets injected into them. You're seeing my point there. That's the only way it ever happens is if it gets stung somehow. And all of a sudden the parasite takes a hold of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the wasp is laying eggs. The larvae of the wasp need to be growing out of the orb weaving spider. And so the parasite that the wasp delivers, whether the wasp knows it's doing it or not, or understands the process, I don't know. And they don't know. But, I mean, they've even found parasites driving other parasites in order to keep, to it's like the cycle.
It sounds like the elite controlling government.
Right. It's natural. This is supposed to happen. This is the design of nature. Like you said, if 80% of life is parasitically induced, well, then, yeah, you can start to see that this is actually a part of nature, that there's a certain aspect of programming going on, that without these parasites, a lot of this life would not exist. So the wasp comes in, stings the spider. All of a sudden, the spider starts acting differently. Goes down and tears down his beautiful, wonderful web. Just like we've gone and lost all of our inheritance. We don't have land anymore. We have nothing in our lives except rented abodes. We have nothing. We've lost touch with everything to do with actually being attached to the land. We're floating around in citizenships on the Sea of Commerce. We have no idea.
And we enjoy doof for a breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, yeah. food reversed, food backwards, food genetically altered. Yeah, that's Patrick. Right, so now the orb-weaving spider, man, he's like, well, gosh, something is driving me. I don't know what. I'm going to go and tear down my own home, my own beautiful, I'm going to go against my instincts, against my best interests, because, you know, I'm not going to catch any flies. And I'm gonna create a big orb, and I'm going to attach this orb just high enough above the ground so that you know, my predators can't get it, low enough that birds can't get it, and I'm going to attach that big, ugly, nasty orb to a couple plants with one thick, you know, thick cord of silk,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to hang out in the orb, and I'm going to birth wasp babies out of my body. I'm protected now because I've just built a house that was specifically put into my head to be built by these parasites. Parasite is what is allowing the larva of the wasp to actually become life. Now you think about that, and you think of all the other different what tell me again, what was the name of that National Geographic?
Right. Real Zombies: The Strange Science of the Living Dead.
Yeah, I mean, people have to get a copy of that National Geographic, because it's all the different stories in there. Well, eventually they get to the story of toxoplasmosis,
mm-hmm.
Which is the brain parasite that affects humans, one of many, mm-hmm. That the CDC warns is probably in 40% of people.
And how do these things bypass the blood-brain barrier? We had this blood-brain barrier, and that's through injection, obviously.
Yeah, well, aluminum is actually one of the real responsible agents for passing things through that. You know, to say it's a barrier, you think of a wall, but it's more like a cellular...
A filter. A filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more of a communication device. And the aluminum is actually... and the prions are actually what go, and they alter... And misform those communication devices so that things are allowed. A good example is the flu virus. Why is the flu virus so sought after by these guys? Well, it turns out the flu virus is something that you can empty out. You can empty out and just keep the basic structure of the flu virus, which you could say is like keeping the shape of a key that will fit into the receptor of the communication part of your body, the other prion, the other protein, or the other...
And it's a transport.
Right, it's a transportation device. You haul it out, and, I mean, you start reading about what they can do with the flu virus. They can put any disease they want into the flu, quote-unquote, virus, the body of it, and send it on its merry way. You can program it to go to a certain part of the body and infect the body with that particular disease.
Thus the recombinant viruses that you hear them.
Exactly.
And novel, which they use a lot, which is a legal term, like as you said.
And forgive me, I mean, I always try to explain this in the most simple way, and it's very difficult to go back and forth between all the terms of art in science and biology and just basic, you know, common speak, but I find, you know, calling it a cell phone call helps people understand it a lot easier.
Oh, right, exactly, because of the absolute.
So, yeah, I mean, you could probably say, oh, this guy's full of crap. He's not using any big words. Well, I don't expect people to spend 2, 3, 4 years learning a new language just so they can understand me.
Right.
You know, that's for asshole doctors and lawyers, basically.
It's really about baby steps, the whole thing. If you try to absorb all of it at once, you know, like I think we try to do, we try to take big steps because we want to get to the final, you know, we want to get to the answer. We want to think that we've achieved something, just like reading a book, you know. And so what happens is that a lot of that information comes in, and then we get lost somewhere. But I found as I was going through and reading your writings, and especially in this particular one that you sent to me, sometimes it's a little bit confusing, but overall, as I'm going through it, I know that I'm going to grab something. Even if I have to read it 2 times or 3 times, then these things will, it's just like watching a movie, you know, hopefully a good one that produces some kind of betterment in people's lives. And there's very few of those, but as you're going through it, you pick up on things. You might have to, do it 2 or 3 times and, so that's what I hope to do. I have the general knowledge of what you're talking about. I know that they're damaging us. I know that they're trying to hurt us. And the great thing about you and Patrick together, you really have a really good way of conveying the information, and you repeat it in your different podcasts. But it's just like anything else. We've had all these things repeated to us, all these lies and all this disinformation over the years repeated to us. When I listen to you guys and I hear those things over and over again, it's like, I love it when they repeat themselves, because maybe I didn't get it the last time, or maybe I didn't understand it. It just kind of fits into place. And you just have to have patience with yourself. That's possible at this point.
You're literally talking, when it comes to law, when it comes to biology, when it comes to health, science, all these different things, whenever you look at something, you have to start at ground zero. You have to start right at the beginning, and you have to learn a new language. Mm-hmm. Even though the words might sound the same, they are vastly different concepts in each of these art forms. What I keep trying to tell people is that throw etymology out the window. Etymology means nothing when it comes to the specific arts, the specific, you know, the lawyers and the doctors and the scientists here. They all have a different language than you. And until you learn their language, you cannot figure out what the hell they are doing to you. And you also figure out real quick that they don't know what the hell they're doing. They have all these big words, and they're all very specialized, because you don't teach, you know, just like you don't teach your slaves the language that you use to enslave them, the contract language, you also don't teach the people who you are, you know, you take all the, like I said, all the nerds, all the guys who have all this intelligence, and you hone that intelligence, and you say, okay, I want you to focus on just this one thing. Why does this rabbit have an inflammatory response against viruses? Right? He's not thinking, I've got all this information in this area and this area. No, he's focused. He's a specialist. He is not considering the consequences of his actions. Why is government having me, you know, defeat the one thing that is preventing naturally the virus? Why would I want to do that? And then give it to a government who is known to use chemical weapons and to
sell them to other countries
and to force sterilization in different countries, including our own. Why would I want to do that? See, these guys don't think of that because they don't have. They're specialized. This is syndicalism again. This is how they control. Just like, you know, 100 people building a nuclear bomb, each person building a different piece, but they're never told why they're building that piece.
Exactly right. They feel as though they're part, or they're being told and propagandized into believing that they're doing something that is going to be for the betterment of mankind, and then they figure out, just like the interferon, right? They get in there. they find out that something's interfering with the process, right? Someone obviously started this whole research thing, and as soon as they find out what it is, they probably say, okay, we're going to move you guys on to another project, and the scientist, whoever that guy is, the nerd, saying, wait a minute, I want to know more about that. No, we're good. We'll just get you onto Project B.
Let me use myself as an example. Now, I got into sound design. I was very pleased to get into the top sound design company in Hollywood. You know, I worked right across the street from the Kodak Theater and Grauman's Chinese Theater, which is where the Oscars, right? So, I mean, I'm living high on the hog there in Hollywood, and I'm making these sounds, right, for these horrible, horrible demonic creatures. I'm the lead designer on Resident Evil 5. Worked on Resident Evil 4, working all these different horrible, horrible video games and stuff, using horrible, horrible sounds of suffering animals that make the, you know, best sounds for monsters. You know, all doing all this stuff without, and why was I doing it? Well, my resume will show you why, because I won an award and was nominated for several different awards from the Motion Picture Sound Editors Guild.
Nice.
I've got the trophy to prove it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was doing it. And that's why these guys do it. There's the Nobel Prize. There's this prize. There's that prize. There's recognition amongst your peers. Peer pressure, right? It's all that crap. And until you wake up from that and you start questioning, what the hell am I making these monsters for? Why am I literally part of this machine that is promoting horrors, absolute hell on earth? Why am I doing that? Look at all these Masonic symbols in these games. Look at what's happening in this movie. Why am I part of this? Well, I know why, because I wanted to be seen. I wanted my, you know, in limited capacity, I wanted my name in the credits, and I got it. I can now watch a movie, a couple movies, and see my name in the credits. And guess what? They're horrible. They're horrible movies. One's about vampires and werewolves, Underworld, and one's about a guy shoot 'em up, you know, and then a couple others. They're horrible.
Right.
They're horrible, but I fulfilled my dream of getting my name in the credits of a movie. What a lame reason to be working on such filth and such crap and promoting it for, you know, you think about that. Now transfer that into the medical field. Transfer that into the research field.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Listen, man, I forgive you. I'm sure others do as well. A quick question, just a quick deviation. Did you ever meet the guy out there that looks like Jesus and walks up across the street or around that theater? Did you ever meet him or see him?
Yeah, I think so.
Because when
every,
I was out there,
every superhero and every old actor is out there pandering for money, essentially.
I was out there for a Microsoft event, and I believe it was it was probably like 2009, and a couple of people that I used to work with, we kind of gathered there, and we were at the, you know, just kind of hanging out there. They were staying at that hotel where Marilyn Monroe, they found her body,
yeah.
And we were just kind of hanging. We saw him. I figured maybe you see him. He was actually very cool. He took care of an apartment complex or something there, and we had dinner with him. He was pretty cool. I was wondering if you saw him too. But anyway.
Well, we saw one of those in Philadelphia as well, and he was walking on water.
He was walking on water.
Yeah, it looked like he was walking on water.
Okay.
Yeah, those guys, yeah, I mean, it's pretty pathetic, actually.
Yeah, it's
pathetic. You get up close and you see their homemade costumes and stuff, it's pretty sad. And that was, I mean, again, I was very proud. I was right on the corner of Hollywood and La Brea, and my office was, you know, right there, right across from where the Oscars are performed. I'd have to walk out to go get lunch, you know, down Hollywood Boulevard, right by all that. I was very proud of myself for.
No, it's we almost kind of mindlessly, you know, move through this life, and we're told what success is, and of course, success is making a lot of, you know, this fiat currency. And we do the things that we need to do, and people think of lawyers and doctors and, you know, people that achieve a lot of these different levels of, you know, especially near Hollywood and things like that, which Hollywood, one of the most degenerate just
I would never places. Take my family there, I'll tell you that. I would never take my family to L.A. for a vacation. People got to be crazy.
Yeah, I've been out there a few times just to see it. San Diego was actually much nicer. I'm sure you probably made it down
there
a couple times. So we were – I kind of derailed you a little bit there, but we were talking about the spider and weaving the web, and then he changes his whole – you know, design and starts creating these really like subpar spider webs, right?
Yeah, all in the name of allowing the wasp babies essentially to grow and feed on his flesh, just like the other, you know, the ladybug, same thing. Ladybugs are kind of tough, man. They're little badasses. They're really, I mean, they're vicious creatures, even though they're sort of looked at as cute. So the wasp stings the ladybug, and the lady becomes the protector of the wasp larva as it grows inside and eats out its guts.
Mm-hmm.
And it will protect those parasites to the end. So now we go to toxoplasmosis. Toxoplasmosis, another one that was in there. Starts in rats. Okay, a rat will instinctively, when a rat smells cat urine,
mm-hmm.
it will run away from the cat urine. It knows that a cat is near, and it will get out of its territory because it knows the cat wants to eat the rat. Well, toxoplasmosis gets inside the rat. I can't remember how. And the rat, then his brain chemistry is altered by the parasite to be sexually attracted and get a reward mm-hmm. for being attracted to the cat urine. So all of a sudden you have a total reversal of behavior, which absolutely causes the rat to want to be caught by the cat. The cat comes along, says, okay, easy prey. He doesn't know any better. The cat takes the rat, eats the rat. And the parasite is transferred to the cat, which is the purpose of the parasite. The parasite knows, and its whole functionality is to go from the rat to the cat. Well, okay, so now you have your cat, your house cat,
mm-hmm.
all of your cats, basically, carrying the toxoplasmosis, which in its ultimate goal is to get to the human brain.
Yeah, and I just recently, within the last 2 years, I heard about this cat parasite, and I will tell you this, and this is something that is funny, and we laughed about it, but my brother, his wife, hey Lauren, how you doing? They have several cats, one called Angel, and she's actually a demon from hell. And she just won't die, Clint. She just won't, but she's just so evil looking and. But yet she's very, very docile with the kids, you know, and she's very, right? So I would sit there, and then there's all this, and all this, like, cat worship.
Right.
And I said, what's up with all this effing cat worship going on in this house? And then my nephew and, well, my youngest nephew was like, and then I found out just recently, talking to my brother, that they were just, like, laughing hysterically over my comment about the cat worship. And they are most likely have this cat worship parasite. Not to get all science.
Think about the history of cat worship,
exactly.
Right? All the way back into the Egyptian times, and I can't remember the actual names of the gods and everything. But yeah, if you think about cat worship, it's an ancient thing. So yeah, you know, it goes and lays a turd in its box, and you go and clean the turd. The spores come up and infect you with toxoplasmosis. Now this doctor that I have the video in he's out of, I think, Berkeley or some university out there. you know who probably is infected too, but he does this whole spiel, and he's been studying the effects of toxoplasmosis, and one of the things that he's positive about is that it causes the same reaction in us that it causes in rats, which is to be attracted to things that are against our best interest. If a rat is attracted to cat urine, goes to the cat urine or the smell of the cat and is hating, right? Well, we then are attracted to very, very dangerous things. One of the things he's been tracking is high-speed motorcycle accidents. Like these idiots who are, you know, you look at them and you're going, man, that's got to be dangerous. Well, yeah, very dangerous. And they're not doing it because it's their own, you know, you're not on a motorcycle going 150 miles an hour down some mountain road that around every turn could be a car that's going to kill you that you can't see. You're not doing that because you're cool. You're not doing that because you're just a fun guy. You're doing that because every single high-speed motorcycle crash is infected with toxoplasmosis. It's changing and giving you a sexual or pleasurable response, an adrenaline rush, whatever it is, for doing something that is completely against your best interest. Now, you take that and you start thinking about that, and 80% of life on Earth is parasitic in its nature, and I would even probably include humans in that, the way we treat livestock and stuff, you know, in a different type of way. You start thinking about that, and you start thinking all the things that we are doing now, especially today, especially after the advent of vaccination, especially after the advent of all this modern medicine that is completely intermixing species of every kind, putting it into a vial and injecting it into you. And you seriously got to start wondering, is that what's happened? Do we have either a brain parasite? Do we have something that is attacking our very epigenome structure, our DNA, switching on and off switches to cause different reactions or to prevent the fight or flight, to prevent empathy, to prevent caring, to prevent this? What is happening to the species of man?
That's right.
That is causing us to not only just absolutely do the stupidest of shit, but also to sit back and not do anything about it.
Right, yeah. We watched, I mean, I watched the news, and just to be able to pick out the propaganda, which is just, you know, like 90% of the time, if not more. And, you know, we were told, like last night, sitting here, right, we're watching a few things, and then every Saturday night, 10 o'clock, NBC puts this creepy friggin' guy on, and they talk about how this guy killed his wife, and it's a mystery, by the way. And it's like, ugh, and it's the NBC, you know, 10 p.m. Eastern Time mystery of why this man killed his wife and how nobody thought that he did it and all this other stuff. And I thought to myself, this is so disgusting to me because I know exactly what, I mean, it's just more proliferation of why are people doing this? Why did he do that to this woman that he was married to for 10, 20 years? Because, and of course, it's with the proliferation of all these, you know, the psychotropic drugs and all that other stuff, they're just making people believe that people will just kill someone that they've known for, you know, for all these years. And it just destabilizes the mind.
Well, and,
like,
and
I would never do that. I would never, you know, want to take somebody's life.
We sit here all the time, man. I mean, how many people do you talk to on a daily basis and say, what the hell's wrong with people, right? I mean, how many people out there listening to this very broadcast have the same problem as every one of us, which is, hey, I can't talk to my mom about this. Hey, I can't talk to my friends about this. I have to act like an imbecile around my friends just to frickin' fit in. How many people out there have the same exact complaint that it seems like everybody around them is stupid? And there was an article that came out not too long ago about a brain parasite causing people to be stupider. Right? I mean, you start following this stuff, you start saying, huh, maybe that is the problem. Maybe it's not that I'm smart. Maybe I'm normal. Maybe something's happened to people that is not visible, that is not explainable through brainwashing and education. Maybe something else is going on here. And that is where I started going, you know, maybe I'm not special. Maybe I'm not different as maybe maybe it's not me that is different. Maybe everybody else has had their crap, their you know, how do you say it? Maybe since we all have the same sort of general stance and same complaint, either they're infected or we're infected.
Or they're just infected more. Because I was saying to you the other day, I said, there's something different about people like, you know, like, well, we're better than, I'm not saying that, but, and then I'm driving to work, and I've been listening to you and Patrick Jordan just religiously, like going there, coming home, and Patrick said the same thing. He said, there's something different about you and me, Clint.
Right?
In his own way, you know? And then he talks about the other 17 or 18 people that he trusts and communicates with and shares information with, and you know, and I think that's so. I think that we have to believe that we have to trust in ourselves. You know what I mean? You know, whatever the case is, whatever the level of parasitic infection or whatever, I think that we have to trust in ourselves and we have to have a hope. Like, I mean, you know, you know, stop doing the podcast, the broadcast over at RBN, but you're still involved. You're here. You know, thank God you're here with me today, and that your message is going to be proliferated, you know, every Sunday at 5, and hopefully we can do this every, you know, every other week or every 2 weeks or something like that to, you know, to keep your message going. I'm totally hoping that we can do that. And, you know, we just have to believe that there's something different. There's something good. There's some kind of power that is overriding all this evil, man. But, you know, as we go back, and I wanted to cover this in your documentary, your video documentary, you went through all of these different, you know, the history of vaccination, from scraping the skin to and then all the people that spoke out and said, what we're doing here is causing more disease. What we're doing here, and it just seems like, and most people would not even be able to fathom this, is that these people have been trying to kill us for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Right, and again, I sit there, I step back for a moment, and I say, is it possible that they're doing that because, you know, say the same reason that the wasp stings someone, you know, to proliferate the, not necessarily the young, but the parasite that lives in the young. Mm-hmm. You know, is it possible that they're doing this to us in these sciences and medical fields? Is it possible that the parasite is driving vaccination? Is it possible that the parasite in some way or shape or form is proliferating the spread of the parasite in this? And, you know, it's a valid question. I'm not. You know, I don't want to sound like it's a nutball type of thing. It's a very valid question that you cannot dismiss, especially after you read and see National Geographic spread, and you read all this stuff about prions and everything else. You just can't. You can't dismiss it. Mm-hmm. And if you do, again, I gotta wonder what's causing you to dismiss. You know, what the same thing that causes the orb-weaving spider to tear down his home, mm-hmm. and his substance? I mean, what is causing people to have this cognitive dissonance? What is causing people to shut down whenever you try to talk to them? What is causing that? I don't think it's just. I think it's something more. But it's just me, you know.
Well, you know what? Listen, man, your speculation is. And I don't even know how to put this. Your speculation is so much more, you know, when you start talking, you used to, because of what you know, because of the research that you've done, you know, it's just like that commercial when, you know, so-and-so speaks, everybody listens with that, you know, whoever, something that we heard on this Tell Live Vision. But when you talk, you know, and even speculate on things, you're so close to the, real information, and the information can only be gathered together and say there's something at work here that we're not seeing. There's something at work here that is so fantastical. Let's start to speculate. And as beings on whatever we're on, whether it's flat earth, round earth, whatever the hell it is, you know, your ability to do that and speculate is really truly the basis of consciousness, and really truly the basis of what can build the right kind of world without these.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, Patrick and I came to the same conclusion. Patrick probably way before me because he's been doing this longer. But I'll tell you, there's one thing that Patrick said that always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And it is ironically, or maybe not ironically, it's the same thing that the Bible says. It says, hey, get out of the cities. Circumcise yourself, which means separate yourself. Doesn't have anything to do with penis. From these people who have a different law than you. Don't live amongst them. And Patrick's thing is, hey, let's quarantine ourselves. Mm-hmm. Let's look at each other. And if we do have this sort of what I would just say would be a normal curiosity or a normal, hey, questioning capacity, and let's quarantine ourselves. Like minds should get together. Right, instead of trying to live in these horribly corrupted societies that very well might be beyond people's
turning
around. Why are we trying to fit in when instead we should be actually separating ourselves from these systems of absolute tyranny and control? It doesn't really make sense for us to stay, except. It does make sense when you think, well, you know, we're trying to protect our species. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to
survive,
to actually help and get people back to a normal state. And yeah, there's no like elitism here. This is purely. I mean, this is. I'll put it to you this way, man. There's one thing that I think that we need to, in these small circles that we have, in your listening audience. There's one thing that. It takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of ego killing to do, mm-hmm. but we need to admit defeat. Okay. First thing we got to do, we got to say, we're defeated in every aspect from our education, our public mindedness. We've had everything stolen from us as far as lands and property. We've been medically hijacked. Our DNA has been altered. Everything that you know, we complain about is a sign of our defeat. We cannot fight it. We can't do anything about it. That's the first step. Okay, we have been utterly defeated. The knowledge has been hidden from us for many generations. Our parents were defeated. You know, oh, we won a war. Well, whose war did we win? It wasn't our war, right? We are a defeated people. And until we recognize that, I think, until we step back and say, okay, we're in a prison. We're obviously in an open-air prison, the debtor's hell. We need to step back and say, wow, why are we just accepting this as normal? All this horrible, horrible stuff. I think that's the first step to everything, is that admission to ourselves. And that's a harsh sort of thing, because it means that you got to stop being patriotic. It means you got to stop supporting churches and all these false things that are set up, mm-hmm. and really get back to the natural side of things. Because as Patrick said, we got to quarantine ourselves. The only solution is an organic or biological solution. There is no other way out of this sickness, mm-hmm. that we have in this society, but it's all a biological cause, and so we have to have a biological solution. We have to figure out how to, in the movie The Thing, when they finally figured out that someone was the thing, someone was the parasite, you know, they had a blood test, and when they burned the blood, the parasite would form and it would jump out, and that's how they knew who was sick. Well, we don't have a thing test. We don't know who's who and who's acting as themselves and who's acting against their best interest, right? So I don't know. To a lot of people, it sounds like science fiction, and of course, science fiction is designed to make you think that. To make you dismiss anything that's out of the realm of public educated minds and possibilities. So it's pretty tough to put forward a theory like this, even with all the proofs and all the different examples in nature, and not expect to be laughed at, especially by those who might be.
The commoners who have been injected with a false confidence.
Yeah, well, you know, you really, like I said, if you start thinking about it, if you really apply your mind to it, all of a sudden, when you add the brain parasite or whatever it is that is altering the minds of men, everything to cause us to act against our best interests and possibly in the best interests of an extremophile, which likes volcanoes and no oxygen and methane. They love those types of atmospheres. Mm-hmm. Death, hell, basically. You know, you start thinking about that, and it answers just about every question out there. That's the problem. You see, all of a sudden it's very logical and reasonable when you say, well, why are we spraying the skies and resetting the oceans? Why are we, you know, put any equation in there? And the brain parasite actually makes a lot of sense.
And most people say, Clint, it can't be that simple. Maybe government can help us figure this out.
Well, what was the Holmes quote? You know, when all other you know, things, I can't remember what it is. When all other options are proven wrong, then that which is most or least likely must be the. I can never remember quotes. Sorry.
No, yeah, I remember that reading that in here. So let's see.
One other thing I do want to mention,
okay,
is xenotransplantation, which was my first. You know, after I finished the documentary, and I finished it by discovering that they were injecting human aborted fetal tissue into people,
mm-hmm,
and that they were growing the vaccines on human aborted fetal tissue, and I'm just like, holy crap. Well, that led me into all of the different aspects of that, all the different sharing of proteins and everything. That led me to prions, and I think prions are one of the most important.
That's where I was going to go next. I said, can we cover the enormity of prions in the next, say, 15 minutes?
Right. So at the beginning, I talked about that, you know, medicine to me is just nothing more anymore than essentially cannibalism. And what you're talking about is instead of eating other people, you're injecting them right into your blood. You're injecting them right into your muscle. You know, when the X-Files, the new X-Files came on,
mm-hmm,
I had a bunch of people contact me and say, dude, you got to watch the X-Files. They're talking about everything you talked about. And so I watched the little part they were talking about. And they were talking about Henrietta Lacks, which was we called her the angry black woman, me and Patrick, where they took her cervix and they created these HeLa cells. And you can look that up yourself, Henrietta Lacks.
What did she have? Did she have some kind of,
She was like insane, and they took her special kind of cells, and the HeLa cells, I can't remember what they do, but they're, I think you can make anything out of them. Like you can grow them in, they're kind of like stem cells, I think, okay, where you can grow them into anything. But you know, they injected Henrietta Lacks's cloned cervix into just about everybody on Earth. So we always joke that every single one of us, including the white supremacists, has a little bit of angry black lady, you know, inside of us, right? So we all have this insane woman, part of her DNA infused with ours. And, you know, the theory kind of is that they're sort of slowly altering our own personalities to the point where we're going to be unrecognizable when we have all this different interactions with all these different species and everything. And the Bible warns about this cross-contamination, you know, why certain blood types should be stay with only certain blood types, so that kind of thing. Xenotransplantation, any procedure that involves the transplantation, implantation, or infusion into a human recipient of either live cells, tissues, or organs from a non-human animal source. The human version would be allotransplantation. Human body fluids, cells, tissues, organs that have had ex vivo contact with non-human animal cells, tissues, or organs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the FDA, by the way. This is a warning for people that are going to receive blood transfusions or body parts, that kind of thing. Although the potential benefits are considerable for xenotransplantation, again, that's any type of injection or anything. of any kind of animal part, like we've been talking about. The use of xenotransplantation, according to the FDA, raises concerns regarding the potential infection of recipients with both recognized and unrecognized infectious agents. They're talking about prions and the possible subsequent transmission to their close contacts and into the general human population. People don't realize that when you get a vaccine, you're actually shedding the vaccine disease for quite a while.
Shed virus, you shed all kinds of things.
Right. Of public health concern is the potential for cross-species infection by retroviruses, this is the FDA, which may be latent and lead to disease years after infection. Moreover, new infectious agents may not be readily identifiable with current techniques. So what we're really talking about here is prion disease. And when we're talking about dementia, when we're talking about Alzheimer's, we're talking about ALS, when we're talking about multiple sclerosis, anything that is of the dementia class, which is hundreds and hundreds of diseases, thanks to the psychiatry industry, you know, it's basically all one disease with different symptoms, depending on what the prion does. I'm convinced at this point that all these dementia diseases, all these modern diseases that are of the mind, or certain aspects of cancers, the prions are actually what protects the cell from the cancerous cells, and if you infect the prions, the healthy prions, and you misfold them, what you could call evolution or devolution.
You remove protection.
Right. And I mean, if you think about it, if you have an animal prion, like a scrappy from sheep, and it goes and it rewires the human version of the healthy human prion, it literally is transferring, communicating, and altering that into itself. So it's creating it's changing the human prion, the protein, into a sheep prion. And then that one is attached to another one. That one's attached to another one. And that's why when they do an autopsy on people that have, say, Alzheimer's, they have what's called spongiform encephalopathy, which is the same thing as mad cow disease. The cows, they have these spongiform-looking brains because the prions that are in chains have all misformed, and they've caused basically holes in the brain like Swiss cheese. You know, the hole goes all the way through the cheese.
Right.
Well, spongiform encephalopathy is the same thing, and that's being caused by these prion infections where as the FDA warns, cross-species infection by retroviruses and the proteins, infectious agents, as they call them, that's what's happening, folks. I mean, you're getting early-onset Alzheimer's disease, early-onset Parkinson's disease. All these different diseases are being recognized on a daily basis in new and ever-increasingly scary studies, all as the same disease, a prion disease. It's very frightening. And this is a gentleman named Rhodes wrote a book called Deadly Feasts that I highly recommend because it talks about the Kuru epidemic and all that. And see, even books like this guy, who's a Pulitzer Prize winner, what he did not mention in his book is that Kuru, which happened in New Guinea, where people literally turned into zombies because of prion disease, the
cannibalism.
Known prion disease, and well, they said it was cannibalism.
Right, right.
But Patrick, being the researcher he is, he went further. He found out that it was the Japanese that were vaccinating these tribes, these New Guinea tribes, who'd never had any experience with outside people, and that they were experimenting on them with, I'm trying to think of the actual name of the virus.
Visna,
yes, thank you. Hey,
yeah, I've been listening, man.
Yeah. So we found out that even before this Kuru, which they blamed on the women eating the brains of the dead, was actually an injection, again a vaccination, of these Japanese testing the Vishnu virus to see, basically the same biological testing that's allowed in the United States through the biological warfare program.
Now, this is another one of these perfect transport viruses?
Well, I don't think they... because this was in the 30s or 40s,
mm-hmm.
They didn't know exactly, this was all experimental,
mm-hmm.
Just like the rabbit thing was in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this case they chose a very desolate people to see, as that has no outside contact with people. As a perfect study case, let's inject them with the Vishnu virus, see what happens. And I think ultimately, if I remember correctly, it was a prion,
mm-hmm.
that they actually spread.
And this is a folded protein.
Well, it's like I said, you have everybody has the prions. Mm-hmm. They are what protect your cells from cancer, for instance. So again, if the communication device gets tampered with, which is the prion, and something comes and attaches to the prion that tells it, oh, you're now going to be you're going to fold in a different way or misfold, evolve, whatever, and you're going to be, and then you're going to tell your next prion that you're attached to, and all of a sudden your cell is left free to be infected by whatever cancer virus they're putting in you.
And for you science fiction people, when the shields are down, right? When Scotty puts the shields down, right? Or when he puts them up, that type of, makes it more susceptible to these diseases. Now, I heard some things about HIV, and this one guy was saying that the HIV virus is protected. The immune system cannot eradicate it because it has this protein coating. Now, is that an accuracy or no?
I think my personal opinion is that HIV or AIDS, which I'm not even sure has any connection, is just another form of prion disease. We talked about this kind of earlier. Well, I think what happened is that they figured out a way to use prions to prevent the interferon problem, basically.
Okay.
So the FDA also says scientists believe that the potential for transmission of an infectious disease from the animal source to a human is of concern, either when live non-human animal cells, tissues, or organs are implanted directly, and that's the same thing as injection, into a human, or when human cells are exposed to a live non-human animal cells by ex vivo contact. Experience with organ allotransplantation has shown that diseases such as human immunodeficiency virus infection, which is HIV, Khrushchev-Yakov disease, which is prion disease, that's one of the few ones they admit, hepatitis B virus injection, hepatitis C virus infection can be transmitted from the human donor to the recipient. These concerns may extend beyond the recipient to the general public because the potential for subsequent transmission of the infectious agent to the recipient's contacts and to the general population. So you got to think about this. One of the ways that prions are spread, keep in mind, prions are like indestructible, man. You can't burn them, you can't freeze them.
As we're saying that they...
It's incredible when you start reading about it, and Give people this, my thing, my couple write-ups about them, and you got to read this stuff because it's incredible. But what you find is that if you get an eye transplant, or medical instruments that they don't have the correct cleaning, if they reuse, this is why medical procedures are so expensive, because they have to replace all the metal instruments, because the prions actually connect and stick to metal, and then they'll transfer them into your body, and a year and a half later you'll be dead from prion disease. So they throw away. I mean, you can't, there's nothing you can do to kill these things.
Yeah, it travels from the eye into the brain and killed that one individual within 2 years.
Yeah, I interviewed Christine Lord. Her son developed prion disease. She's convinced it was from meat, and even though her son never ate meat, and I'm like, no, it's vaccines. So, you know, unfortunately, she's a BBC reporter, but I kept trying to tell her, no, it's vaccines, vaccines, it's vaccines, because you're bypassing every possible safeguard. You know, I can eat a prion and it's not going
to
affect me.
And if she doesn't believe it, it's because she would have to believe and understand that she's responsible for it. So that's hard.
And that's a big thing about it, man. Like you said, we have to admit our not only our own defeat, but the fact that we've literally been induced into harming and you know, essentially killing our children slowly. We've been defeated. I mean, it's obvious when you
in concert. I mean, we are defeated, but we've slowly been conquered, and then we have to realize, you know, I mean, the Rubicon was crossed so long ago, because who's going to question science? Who's going to question doctors? Who's going to question any of this stuff? Because people just sit back. Fear is used, right? Like with the polio. Now, like, I was taking some notes as I was going through the documentary, the SV40 cancer plague, which a lot of people say is sexually transmittable. And let's see here. Of course, the 1956 propaganda video with the little boy and asbestos is used. A dangerous but not non-polio virus is in it. What is that? Is that the cancer virus?
And you have Sabin and Salk. One guy created the super sugar cube. One guy the live virus injection. Right, and they both blame each other. They both admit the fact that the vaccine is what caused the polio outbreaks, the paralytic polio. Mm-hmm. And now polio has been basically misdiagnosed on purpose. They in America we call it.
Chronic fatigue
syndrome. In London, in England, they call it something else. Okay. But it's polio. It's the dumbed down version of polio, basically still being spread through vaccines.
And now there was three before, or at least they said. Now there's 72 different strains of it.
So yeah, you've got both Sabin and Salk both coming out on the record, in congressional record, that the other one is the cause for the cancer and for the polio outbreak.
Basically the Beavis and Butthead of that generation.
Yeah, you had areas where 77 or so percent of the population that developed polio had three vaccine injections,
right.
That kind of thing. So, yeah,
the numbers speak for themselves, but we never see the numbers because it's
all in congressional record. That's the scary part. Is it all, you know, the whole damn thing is laid out in congressional record. You can see that one, vaccines don't work at all in any way that they say they do, although there is a side effect to them, which I'll get in real quickly here. But you look at the record, and they tell you on the record that these things don't work and that they're the cause of all disease. And I'm like, why aren't people paying attention to that? But one of the things we did find is that vaccines do work. They have a specific functionality that I think most people don't grasp. And we talked about this once, and we never really gave it much more credit, but I think this is very important. A disease is a very important part of childhood, right? You're supposed to get chickenpox. You're supposed to get the measles. You're supposed to go through the full functionality of them. You're supposed to express the symptom, and that is what shapes your epigenome and shapes your body to develop against future disease, basically. So, an example, if I get a vaccine for measles, I do not express the measles, and I don't express the measles symptoms, I still get measles. What I'm not expressing is the symptoms. And because I'm not expressing the symptoms, my body is not getting the benefit of those symptoms. It's not causing a chain reaction to change and switch on my chemical switches in my epigenome. It's not doing a lot of things. And what it is doing is saying, well, because I didn't express the symptoms, I now have a 2,000% higher chance of getting this kind of cancer.
All right, I got to stop you right there. Clint Richardson, tonight, 5 p.m., the very first show, Corporation Nation, every Sunday. Clint, I'll be in communication with you. Actually, stay on the line just for a few minutes afterwards. And thank you for joining us today. incredible information, needed information. We got to get this out there. We got to get it proliferated into the world and stop this madness.
You're all infected.
Don't put that on your wish list. That's for sure to babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. Fear nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched. That's a bitch. Now we gotta teach.